Yo, it's Marbelita here. Welcome back to Ascension Things. So today what we're going to be talking about is avoiding responsibility. Now, it's really easy when it comes to building your wealth and your finances, no matter what kind of business you are, from being, let's say, a therapist to owning your own business to even being like a healer or a reader of some kind. Doesn't matter where you are, you do need to tackle your bills, but it's really, really difficult if you're disorganized, if avoidance is your way of dealing things, if retail therapy happens to be your version of avoidance, if you don't have in line certain tax deductions or you haven't set up your LLC or your company name. Now, what can you do now so that you can get to tackling? Because we have several things that we have going on, right? We have school loans, whether it is some sort of educational bill, you have your rent, you have your mortgage, you might be the type that's mooching off of someone else. I mean, I don't know your business, but whatever levels you're at, we can get you tackled now in a really simple way so that when you are ready to go do your bills or you open up an envelope, you're not panicking. You ready to get started? Let's do it. Now you might be saying, hey, wait a minute. I thought this is the spiritual type of podcast. We're going to be talking about business, finances, organization, but it all comes down to your attitude. And that attitude is gratitude. Gratitude for being alive. Gratitude for having the health that you have, whether it's a good health or bad health, because everything comes with a lesson. So that's what we're going to be working on is your spiritual tax. Welcome to Ascension Things. My name is Marbel Canseco, and you can find us at ascensionbodega.com. Let's get started. Okay, guys, first let's get real. It comes down to a few different steps. When it comes to debt, most people energetically believe that debt is a bad thing. I don't think debt is a bad thing, not financially and not spiritually. Why? One, if you're in debt when it comes to your mortgage, you have somewhere to live. If you're in debt when it comes to your school bills, to your loans, you had education, right? So you have to be grateful for the things that you were in debt for. If you ended up going on retail therapy and spending thousands of dollars on shoes, you have to be grateful for the fact that you were ever able to do that. But we get to a point where we realize maybe too much is a good thing. So this is where we talk about less. Minimalism, which I don't really like the word as much, but minimalism is a theory, well, it's a movement right now, where people are decluttering their lives and living with the minimum amount of things that they need in their life so that they can give themselves mental and emotional space. Marie Kondo is one of the more famous ones when it comes to this, but there are documentaries like on Netflix called The Minimalist that also touch base on it. Now, for me, it's more on the extremes. We live in a world where we accumulate items from family members, from friends, between the fact that we've moved, school, past, relationships, so on and so forth. So it's really, really difficult. Oh, if you heard that, that's my air conditioner. So give me 1 second to turn it off. Okay, sorry. So when you accumulate all of these items, it's really easy for us to say, I'll deal with it later. But I don't think that's what you should do. Specifically, the number one place that you need to be working on is your bedroom, because sleep is the most important. So decluttering your bedroom is the most important room in the house. Once you've been able to tackle that, then we get to finances. So let's assume you've already done that. You have the most tranquil bedroom in the room. In the world. And if you don't, I'll talk about that in another episode, how we're able to help you. But when it comes to your finances, it can be really difficult because it pertains on many things. If you're a mother, if you are a business owner, if you are an employee, if you manage someone else's business or someone else's finances, if your partner happens to be in a lot of debt and you're not, or the other way around, or both, right? So you have to list out, what are the issues that I need to deal with? Once you've been able to list those out, then it comes down to organization. Now, I'm going to assume here that your paper is all over the place. It's cluttered. You maybe have things, invoices from years ago that are really not necessary. So the simplest way of doing it is to be able to get all of your bills together, right, and create a calendar. So I'm going to suggest today, and this is not sponsored, it's called Dollar Bird. It's the simplest calendar in the world
for your bank account. You can go in there and put all of your reoccurring debts, all of your reoccurring payments on there, right? And then you can also do extractions like automatically withdraw every week from this account, which we're going to call your cash and operations account. You can withdraw every week to put into different savings accounts if you want. We're not going to be talking about financial tiers, which is putting your money in multiple accounts, or the envelope method, which is where you can put all of your money into different accounts so that you are able to siphon off money from each account into the appropriate bill or the appropriate purpose, which could be your vacation or the education for your child in the future, right? So if you keep everything in one bucket, it's going to be a mess. So we're all about separating those buckets. Before we get into how you can separate your bucket, first you got to look at it. Now, do you have an office space? Right? You need one. Even if you're just a stay-at-home mom, you need some place for you to be able to sit down and have quiet time so that you could tackle your bills, so you could tackle your income, right? The whole point of living life is so that you have cash flow for you to be able to exist and enjoy life. Most people don't realize that cash flow is profit, or in some cases, income minus your cost of living. But when you own business, it's not only that, but it's also the sales that you have incurred, or for example, for my family, it'd be monthly rentals. So the rent minus the cost of operations. Then when we have that money, we minus out our cost of living and our expenses. After that, we have cash flow. The best thing that I could suggest to you is a game called Cashflow by, I believe it's Guy Kiyosaki. Hold on. I'm slaughtering it. It's Robert Kiyosaki. What Robert is able to do when it comes to cash flow, and if you haven't read his book, at some point you should, right? It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it talks about the methodology between two fathers who taught him different lessons, one about getting into debt and the other one about using debt for them to be able to build wealth, right? It's also very spiritual because money is energetic. If you don't have your energy in check, your money is not in check. Most people think that I'm crazy when I talk about this, but the truth is, if you have your spirituality in check, then you believe that money is good. I have never come across a person who is financially secure in who they are and they're negative, right? I have seen people who are very, 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 very rich perceptively, but are miserable because they're missing other areas in their wealth. When we talk about wealth, wealth is not necessarily material. Wealth means that you have your health. Wealth means that you have relationships that have good communication. Wealth means that your income and your returns on investment are successful, right? And that they don't drain you energetically, which comes to the other point that you have time. Time to enjoy your life, time to be with family members, time to be in the present moment, which also brings me to another point. The ability to be present in the moment. Most of us don't have this ability. You do the yogas, you want to be the Buddhas, you want to act like you know what you're doing, but you don't, right? Because you can't even pay attention to your kid when they're talking to you. You're not in the present moment because there's stress. The reason that there's stress is a lack of something going on in your life, whether it be lack of income, lack of time for you to deal with yourself and your own thoughts versus just taking care of other people, lack of organization can do a big one. Like for me, I used to lose my keys. My God, it was the most annoying thing in the world, and I would annoy myself. Like I'm one of the few people that I've ever seen that can annoy themselves worse than anybody else could. So when I was a teenager, I didn't build good habits because my parents, God love them, didn't realize that my mind could not process without having a set system, right? So I thought that it was normal that if I put my keys anywhere, that other people could magically find them. But being that it hit my head, I didn't know that I wasn't being able to recall information like other people do. Like I would say back then normal people did. Because that ability to recall immediately, my brother would have it. He would know exactly where he would put his keys, where he put his wallet, what shirt he wore yesterday, what he ate for breakfast, a conversation that he had last month. I could not remember these things. So it caused a glitch in the system, if you think about it, right? So if you don't have a system because you have a weakness, and my weakness was disorganization and anxiety, right? If there is no system set in place, then how do you expect this person to succeed? It took so many years. I'm talking about, I think I was like maybe 28 before I really started finding solutions, because I was just getting frustrated with myself. So I had a therapist suggest to me once. She was into feng shui and energy work and all of that. She was phenomenal. And alternative medicine. Like, she was totally open to me being on weed at some point, although I never did it. And CBD oil before CBD oil even was a thing, you know? So, because you have to find the solutions that work for you. At the time, she suggested to feng shui my house, but she said, start with your work area. And that's what I'm going to suggest to you guys, right? So you want to be able to find a system that works for you. For me, when it came to stop losing my keys, I thought it was as simple as putting a hook on a wall and then I could just put my keys there. But that's not true. I had the hook on my wall and I would still lose my keys. And one day I was sitting there looking at the hook for, I think, 15 or 20 minutes, asking myself, why can't I just put the keys on the hook? Any normal person would be able to do this, but I was not. So I realized in that moment that it wasn't about that. I had a habit that I needed to break for 28 years, which is when I started doing that. A 28-year habit, you know, from very, very baby to adult, losing things. So what could I do? The only thing I was ever able to keep was this little teddy bear that my aunt gave me. It was really like a bunny teddy bear. It was a weird thing. Fluffy pink, had a little lace around its neck, but I never, ever lost it. And I realized when I was looking at that hook that the reason I never lost that, but I lost my keys on a daily basis, is because for me, the teddy bear was sentimental, because my aunt died from cancer when I was about 3 years old. And I didn't really get to spend a lot of time with her, but I had great memories. I had lots of photos, stories, and everything about having a great life with her. So it mattered. The teddy bear mattered, the bunny bear, but the keys did not. The thing is, that's twisted, because that is just a memory in the past and I can carry the memory with me whether or not I had the bunny bear or not in my presence. But the keys I needed to function on a daily basis. So that's why I'm bringing you to this. When it comes to your office, you need to figure out a way for you to function on a daily basis, because the emotional stuff is actually simpler. Okay, so how do we make Excel sheets emotional? How do I make you love to input your data? How do I make you want to organize your files? How do I make you do all of that? I can't make you do anything. We're going to be real, right? It's not something that's going to be some simple task for you to conquer. But what you can do is envision a life where once it's organized, you can relax, right? The tension is only created by extending an inability to tackle what is in front of you, right? Wise words. So if you are creating tension, which if it was like, let's say, oh, I don't even know what happened. Hold on, something fell from my roof. That was really freaky. I have no idea where that sound came from. But anyway, you heard it, right? It was like a clink. So if you were building up sexual tension, that's what you would want. You will want to extend it. You would want the person, the lover, the partner, to come towards you, but also not be so close and not so accessible. This is why when it comes to almost abusive relationships or those relationships that never come to fruition, it's almost borderline exciting because you never really truly get what you want. So it's a good type of tension. The bad type of tension, right? The one that doesn't function or serve you, which that one might not be either because it might be on a healthy relationship habits, but let's just assume it was a good thing. In its negative, when it comes to your daily work, procrastination, right? Most people use the word, oh, I'm a procrastinator. I just leave it to the last minute and I just get it done anyway. What it's actually doing is making you an addict right? You're addicted to the rush of doing things last or later or not putting it in front so that you get that anxiety. So you're addicting yourself to anxiety. You're addicting yourself to being a procrastinator. A lot of people use the word perfectionist as a replacement for the word procrastination. I'm a perfectionist. I can let it out to the world. I can't complete it because it's not perfect. Perfection is actually just a process that you have developed for you to be able to give an excuse that you are not doing something when it comes to daily life. It can also be a reasoning when it comes to artistic abilities, but what it is stating to yourself, I'm a perfectionist, therefore I cannot. There are people who are perfectionists at being imperfect, and that's what I had to learn, right? Perfectly imperfect is a phrase that I absolutely love. So there's times where I'm doing something, and because I have the tendency of wanting to get it 130% perfect, I know that it's not. So I say to myself subconsciously, and I don't think I've ever mentioned this out loud, done is better than none. Done is better than none. And then I just move away, right? And it's become my mantra. I'll do the finances. Done is better than none. I have a day where I do certain types of financial check-ins, one day where I will do certain types of bill pay. Done is better than none. I have my checklist, go through, boom, 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 boom. The reason I even am able to do that at this point in time in my life is because I was able to get over the emotional stuff. So you're going to have a lot of emotional decluttering if this is the process that you're going to start in. But for that to happen, you're going to have to learn to love yourself. So this is way deeper than just putting on a spreadsheet. It's prioritizing the fact that you need to love yourself enough to say to myself, I'm going to tackle this. I can conquer it. I can get it done. I can create a lifestyle for myself because I decided to. Avoidance is hurting me more than proactiveness because it's all about being proactive in your life and in your lifestyle. So how do we become proactive in our lifestyle when everything is a mess? Now, let's just assume for a minute that you're a neat freak. Neat freaks have just as much problems as people who are messy. I'm a big fan of Einstein's theory of leaving his desk messy because he was in the middle of his processes. That's the way that he functioned, which is fantastic. But for today's day and age, when it comes to tech, the tech won't be able to pick up the work that is necessary for you to function as a human being, meaning paying your bills, mortgage, rent, loans, receiving income digitally, checking your accounts. It won't work, right? I would love for it to be a situation where I say, leave your desk messy and this is your artistic process. But in this case, it doesn't work. Why? Because we need certain basic things for us to be able to work on the creative stuff. I think when you become a creative person and you want to live in a state of mess, I think it's phenomenal if it's the process that allows your mind to tap into something ethereal, which I like to call the collective consciousness. The collective consciousness for me is a higher state of being beyond the spiritual realm inside of our body. So if you're able to tap into that, you're able to succeed much more. You're able to receive data and information that most normal human beings are not able to receive, right? This is not what I'm talking about. You have to be inside of your mind in a logic state for you to analyze your bills, for you to be able to work on creating income, for you to create that marketing campaign. These are not things that you can go into a state of meditation and reach, right? Because it's not going to pay your bills to do that. There are several things you could do. If you're the creative type, you can hire it out if you have the finances to do that, so you have more mind space. I'm a big believer in hire it out so you don't do it yourself. But a lot of us don't have that ability or don't have the means to do that. So what do? Step one. Okay, so I wrote a little list here just to keep you guys on track because I'm going to talk about each one of these topics in depth. So we're just going to skim over it. So I don't want you to think like I'm leaving you without a plan. Over the next few months, we're going to tackle all of this together. So go ahead and you share this audio with friends, have them subscribe. I want you to get yourself a partner, get yourself somebody that you can confide in and say, hey, listen, you're not the type that judges me. Or maybe you are, but you do it in such a way that's constructive. I need your help. I need to tackle what's going on in my life when it comes to finances. Will you help me? Let's do this together, okay? If you can't and you don't have anybody that you can trust, woman, girl, they, I know, trust me, it happens. So we're going to do it together, okay? So I'm going to be almost like your accountability partner. So what do you do first? The first step in being able to tackle your office, your bills, your income, your debts, being able to plan for your retirement, being able to plan for a child, for changes, for buying a home, all of that is that you need to visualize what you want. That's step one. I'll talk about vision boards in the future. We're going to talk about how to create a visual plan, how to create an action plan as well, because dreams without written goals and an execution strategy will become wishes, okay? You need to have all of these in tow for you to be able to execute a system for yourself that is actionable, measurable, and be able to do it on a consistent basis. It's gonna take time, and you're gonna have to start adjusting them, but you just start. That's the whole point, start, right? You start with visualizing your space. You visualize what you want. In life, you visualize your office, what you would like it to look like. You can go on Pinterest. You can create a little vision board for yourself. Visualize your mental space. How am I going to feel? Is this going to be something that will tackle my anxiety? Do I even feel anxiety? Maybe my flippantness is down to the point of narcissism, where it's all about me and I don't care about the bills at all. And I'm pushing it off to my partner, to somebody else's responsibility. How can I take control of my life? That's what you're going to visualize, right? You're not going to look at results right now when it comes to this. I don't want you to look at results because it's really easy to say, I'm going to be a millionaire in a year. It's a lot of steps to get to that point for some people. Why is it not good for you to do that? It's not about being materially wealthy. It's about being emotionally, environmentally, relationship, emotion, you know, your the people in your life, the environment of where you live. That type of wealth. That's what we're going to be focusing on. The next step, step number two, is you're going to be categorizing your bills, right? Every single one of your bills has a category. So for example, I'll give you an idea. There are business bills, right? The business, if it's an LLC or a corporation, will have different types of categories for those bills that are deductible. Some are tax deductible, some are not. Right? Some are just considered expenses and are off your bottom line. Now, I know it might be going over your head, but you have to know about this. That would be completely different than your cost of living expense for your personal life, right? What is personal? What is your health, you know, your health bills, like your medical bills, even getting your hair done, that's personal care, makeup, paying for your mortgage, paying for your rent. Now, this is something that is going to be a little bit controversial, but it's something that if you read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, your home is not your asset. This will be one of the top 10 number things that I will ever tell you in life. Your home is not an asset, right? Because when you go to ask for a loan, they are not going to ask you for your assets that are due. Right? Because you're not making any money off of this asset unless you're renting out your home. If you have a two-family home, then it is an asset. But if you are living alone in that home, condo, whatever, and you have a mortgage on it, it is not an asset. It's considered a debt. So you're going to move it to your debt pile. It's going to make you really upset, but it's going to give you a different perception of where you are in terms of debt. Right? Because if you think that $200, $300, $600, or if you're in New York, $800,000 for a home and up, well, 2-3 bedroom is an asset, but yet you owe at least 90% of it, if not more, right? It is not an asset. If you only owe, let's say 10%, then yeah, you're so close to it being done, then you can start considering it an asset, but I wouldn't, not until it's paid off. Okay. Going back to the point, You need to categorize your bills as debts and income, right? Personal debt, personal income. Business debt, business income. Then if you have something which is very specific, which is investments, right? Stocks, bonds, real estate, property, rentals, anything that gives you a return on an investment, you're going to have the same thing. Some of them you will have expenses, some of them you will not. Like you purchase the stock, you are then declaring on your income your return on investment, which is considered a dividend, right? So you can look at all of these online if you're getting a little confused, but we're talking about how to categorize bills. You can literally go on there and Google, how do I categorize my bills? And you will get tons of articles on there. You can go to, I think it's called balance.com. I believe that's the website, something similar. They have tons of articles on there. It's already outlined. Easy checklist information that you can find so that you can categorize your bills. This should not take you more than at least 3 to 4 hours. Unless you have so many assets, it'll take you multiple days, right? But it should be like 3 hours maybe maximum for you to find out how much you owe to Liberty Mutual for your car insurance. How much do you owe for this and that? And put it in a category, right? So you have insurance, but insurance is not the same life insurance, medical insurance, car insurance. They're in different categories. So I want you to put them in the right one because some are deductible and some are not. This is the part that might be a little frustrating. Why am I making you do it first? Because the point here is once you are able to categorize it and put it in the proper box, then when you go to look at your debt, you're going to see what's good debt and what's bad debt. And that's what we're going to talk about next. Okay, so the next step, step three, we're going to be talking about breaking down your debts. Now, when I mentioned good debt and bad debt, we're going to have to clarify that. Conventional thinking is that good debt means I owe money on my school loans. That's good debt. I owe money on my own personal home. That's good debt. I'm going to tell you to wipe those out and consider them bad debt. They are not serving you in terms of making income, right? Yes, you may have gotten a better job. Yes, you may live in a better neighborhood where your children are able to live great, or even you are able to access better jobs, right? But that's not the type of debt we're looking for. When I speak about debt, I mean the money you effing owe to someone who is not yourself, okay? That is bad debt because it goes to a bank. It doesn't go to you. Good debt can be things like investment. I have $500 in my Robinhood account, right? I've purchased it and it's making a dividend on me, right? But right now the stock is down. I know eventually I will sell it at a better stock, right? So you have debt there, but it's not necessarily immediate debt. It's long-term debt, right? A better example would be if you have a multiple property unit and you owe, let's say the property costs $500,000. You owe $250,000 in a mortgage, but every month you're getting, let's say, $5,000 in rentals, right? Rental payments from your tenants. That is good debt because you can deduct the mortgage, you can deduct the interest rate, you can deduct the expenses, you can deduct your time, you can deduct even conversing with a partner, you can deduct, 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 deduct. This is how people become very, very wealthy because they use real estate specifically, but there are other assets you can do the same thing to be able to deduct off of their income tax, right? The income that they make so that at the end of the year, they don't owe Uncle Sam as much as the next guy, right? If you work in a salary. Now, if you work for a salary, which is the next thing we're going to talk about, that's great too, because you're also paying Medicare, you're paying, let's say, your pension plan, you're paying your interest rate for the income tax, right? The percent rate for the income tax. At the end of the year, if you have multiple assets that are paying you money, but you've paid a lot in income tax, they can actually end up nulling each other out. So I know this is a lot to take in, but it's a new way of looking at debt. Because then when you go to get a loan or you go to get a credit card, if you have debt in the right areas, which is something that we'll talk about in super depth in the future,
When you have that, then you are able to attain more wealth, financial material wealth, which then will affect your emotional wealth and your familial wealth. Yeah, right? So you being able to be happy with your family has a lot to do with if you being financially secure. But you're saying right now, but I'm in a lot of debt. I don't have my categories. How can I break down my debts? Listen, school loans, mortgage that you owe on your own house, these are debts that you can get out of eventually. But you have to create a plan for yourself to pay them down. We'll talk about that in another episode too. How to use the right calculators for you to break it down. Calculating if it's even worth paying down your debt. Certain interest rates are so low and that you purchase the house so low that you live in, it's not even worth you paying down the debt because you can use the interest rate money that you would to pay down the debt to make more money with, right? So there are different strategies. Just because you have a fuck ton in bad debt doesn't mean that you can't get out of it, and it doesn't mean you can't make money with it. So we're going to work with that, but you need to know what you owe. You really, really do. And if your interest rate is super high, let's say it's anything above 5%, even 5 is pushing it, we're going to have to figure out how you can refi, right? You can refinance, get a loan. I'll talk about simple and compound interest in the future. But for now, I want you to know how much you owe. And this is the part that's going to be very emotional, specifically if you are the type of person who has never tackled this, right? I remember the first time that I did it, I had like a freaking breakdown because I was like, oh my God, I am in way more debt than I even realized. I think at the time between my university, the credit cards, I had been supporting financially an ex-boyfriend, which was ridiculous. It wasn't all of it, but you know, I got myself into credit card debt because of it. Car tickets that he put on my account, stole my credit card. It was a fucking nightmare. But it ended up being, I think, close to 30 grand, right, in debts. I know that's not a lot for other people, but my university, I was paying most of it as I went along, and I only took a few loans out. But even one of them, I think it shot up from 3,000 to 8,000 because the interest was compounding, and I didn't understand any of this information. So it brought me to a place of knowledge. Like at the time, I had just come out of university, didn't know where I was, what I was doing, what the plan was, and I was scared. And it was just so much easier for me to let the credit card bills slide, to let the bills, the envelopes stay unopened on my desk, and pray to God that somehow I was able to find a way to pay for a meal and to pay for the Metro North to get to work. So I understand how it can feel. I also am here to tell you that you can get out of it. I currently only owe, I think it's about 11 grand on my university because I had to pay off all the other debts before I even tackled that. The plan that I'm on right now, I'm going to be able to pay it off in a year and a half to 2 years, $11,000. If I'm lucky, the way that I'm working with it, I might be able to do it in one financial shot, like one payment, 11 grand. You're going to tell me how, and I'm going to show you how as we go along. So let's go down to the next one, which is number 4. Okay, just give me a second. I need to take a little coffee break. So you go take one with you. And if you're driving, give me a second of silence. I know I'm a little nasally, but I have been trying to get rid of this cold that I've had. It's like a head cold since I went to Maine this summer to visit my friend Anna. By the way, if you've never been to Maine, it's gorgeous. Like I loved it up there. But when I came back, it was like within a week, sick for like 3 weeks, like deadly sick, hacking up half a lung. But I just have never been able to get rid of it. What are we in, like October 1st, October 2nd now? Actually, what date is it right now? October 2nd, right? That's a long time. So I'm hoping that eventually this will come out of my system. But you know, it's the Northeast. You know, we get sick. That's how it works. All right, so let's get to the point. Number 4. After you've analyzed your debt, you've broken it down, you know what category it goes in, you know if it's good or bad debt according to the new conventional way that we're doing things, which is I'm going to be spiritually involved with my stuff, right? You're then going to be able to get to the next pace. This is the part where it will be difficult because once you figure out all of your debts, you might have to declutter some emotional stuff. Once you've set up maybe a day of crying... And then you get to the reality that you need to tackle it, right? I want you to listen to this part. That is where you now get into the analytics of it, which is I'm going to input my income. So everything that brings me money, whether I walk a dog, I babysit, I have my salary, I have a side hustle, I Poshmark, whatever it is that you do that brings you money. Again, you're going to have separate expenses for each one of them. You're going to have separate deductibles for each one of them because they're all different businesses. Even if you didn't file as an LLC or as a company or corp, right, you still need to file it on your tax report as separate situations, right? You'll be able to do the math later when you do your taxes. But trust me, if you're able to put it in a pile or an Excel sheet now, when it gets down to tax time, you're not going to be bitching and moaning at yourself, right? So the first thing you're going to do is grab that dollar bird calendar and you're going to input all of your income. And then you're going to input all of your reoccurring payments. It's going to give you a cash flow sheet without even realizing it. It'll tell you every month how much you have coming in and out of the account. And the reality will set in, right? Then I want you to find, whether it be an Excel sheet, you can use Mint.com, you can use QuickBooks. Try to go really, really simple. I'm going to be honest with you. There is no great option. Like, I love YNAB. Love it. But it's a lot of work. If you've never heard of YNAB, it's pretty much the envelope system for your money. So you have an account. You split it up into different budgets and then you are able to track it. But you have to input every single budget, every single line. It can be very, very tedious. Super great if you can manage that. But for anyone starting out, it will be very, very overwhelming if you don't know how to already do the envelope system. Now, what is the envelope system? The envelope system is a cash management system after you have already paid off all of your debts. But we're going to talk about the profits first system in the future because I don't believe that's the way you should do it. First, you need to do is input everything that comes in and everything that goes out on a monthly basis, right? How much you owe in totality. Let's say you owe $250,000 on a mortgage, $150,000 at 8% on your school loan, right? I want you to write all of that down. And every single month, a deduction from the cost of what is going on because you're also incurring interest, right? So you know every single month exactly how much you owe. You're not going to find a perfect system, but there's definitely tons of them out there for you, from FreshBooks to Wave apps to Xero for business. Those are the simpler ones. If you're in real estate, and this is not for everybody, so you can tune out for a second if it's not you. But there's a few that I've found. Stessa seems to be the cleanest one. You can use Xero with some apps too, but I didn't like it. And then the third one, which I'm trying now, is called it's called RentalHero.io. That one I like so far. The only thing is it doesn't sync with my bank, so I have to export an Excel sheet. I'm changing banks so that I can actually make this sync. HSBC sucks, man. I've never liked it. We've always meant to change, and we never actually ended up doing it. But for everything else, it seems to be working out beautifully. So once you're able to input and export your debts, depending on where you are in business, right? Let's say you have a crafts business, you could easily set up Xero like in a day. Let's say you just are a stay-at-home mom and you function on a salary, Mint.com is probably your best bet because then you get a really good overview. For all of these, Dollar Bird would be the one that I would say is the best thing for you to do for yourself. And it has an app on your phone because it's a calendar and it shows you when your money is going to come out and how poor you are at the end of the month, right? But that being said, it's not about poverty in the way that you think. It's just how much is not in your account anymore. And it can be astounding, right? Between maybe home renovations that you have going on or you're prepping for a new baby. All of this stuff ends up going into your account and creating debt if you don't know how to manage your money. So that brings me to step five. Step five will be another emotional roller coaster. So I'm here to support you. If you go through this emotional roller coaster, remember, things go down, they always come back up,
right? So when you bounce a ball, what happens? It has to go down to be able to reach a higher level. So that's what you are. You are a rubber ball. Okay, I want you to think of yourself as a nice little red rubber ball. So every time something happens that makes you feel like you're going down, remember you can only come back up. Okay, so we're going to go to step 5, which is called the reality check. This is your financial reality check. A profit and loss statement for a business is very simple. It will put all the income, right, that is from that business, which is sales, in the form of sales, or if it's real estate, it would be the rents that are coming in, but it's income that's coming in, right, actual, and then actual expenses that you're spending out, and then at the end of it, you will have profit. From the profit, profit does not equal cash flow, because profit, some of it may be reinvested back into the business, right? When it is reinvested back into the business, it is taken away from that number. So let's say you get $1,000 every month. 75% of that is reinvested to the business. That's $750 being put back into the business. $250 goes to you, right? Of course, excluding taxes, all of that stuff. Then you are taking from your business an owner's paycheck, which is, let's say, $200, $250 from the cash flow, right? That is money for you versus money for the business cash flow, right? There's personal cash flow and there's business cash flow. That's how it works. But when it comes to our salaries, we don't do that. We look at profit, meaning the money that we make at the end of the month after all of our expenses, and we say, hey, I'm going to dump it in a savings account and I'm going to save it for a rainy day. I'm going to save it for an emergency. I'm going to save it for my retirement. That is the wrong way to look at it. You have to pay yourself first, meaning a salary or fund money first. Once you are able to do that, you siphon off every month. So let's say now that you've created a reality check and you're on a lower income base, let's say you only make at the end of the month $300. I don't care what it is, even if it's $100, right? You are going to take off 25 to 30% for you. That goes into a little separate savings account, right? That savings account then is money for you to enjoy your life. If you want to go to a concert with your best friend, that would be the money you spend, but nothing more, right? When you have household expenses, that is taken out from your expenses, but you have to make sure that your household expenses are not frivolous, right? That you getting your hair done at $1,000 every time you go to the salon, but yet you're in $75,000 in debt on your credit card is not a priority. You're going to have to forego a few things for a little while until you are able to claim your power when it comes to your dough, right? So how do we do that? It's the reality check. It's looking at the numbers. Do I really need to get my nails done every week? Maybe I could forego that and get them done every 2 weeks or get it done myself. Or maybe I have a friend who does really great work and it's just not going to charge me as much, right? You can still attain beautiful, luxurious things without having to go full price. For example, Poshmark, eBay, secondhand stores, thrift stores. If you have access to these things and you want to create a, you know, beautiful lifestyle for yourself, there's different ways to do it. Home Goods, Home Sense, all of those places, TJ Maxx, you can get beautiful products for a quarter of the price. Another way of doing it is not necessarily thinking of saving money, but investing in good quality items so that you're not replacing them. I'll give you an example. I am a curvy girl. I am not skinny, but I'm not huge either. So I'm in that in-between phase, which is very, very difficult to find clothes. I recently lost a ton of weight. Like I was at, about 4 years ago, I was 215 pounds, 5'6". So because I've always been athletic, the weight didn't look like it was big on me. But I, you know, in my mind, I weighed a ton and I wasn't healthy. So recently I ended up going on the ketogenic diet with Dr. Berg, which is, to me, one of the best diets there is for my body type. And then I started lifting with the fitness sisters on YouTube, right? So I'm not advertising any of this. It's just the resources that I used. So when I dropped all the weight, the downside of dropping all the weight is that your clothes don't fit you anymore. Like, my pants are falling off of my ass. I looked sloppy, like, you know those sloppy people that they just walk around and they don't give a shit? Like, not the type of sloppy where it looks like it's put together. You know what I mean? Like the, you know, like the rapper look where it looks like it's a $1,000 hoodie. That is not the way that I was looking. I was looking sloppy. And I didn't like it. I've always, no matter what place in my life, have dressed well without being in debt. So I realized I got to do something about this. So for the last year, I started buying these jeans on Amazon that were high waist, which for some reason, it is the most difficult thing to buy, find ultra high waist pants. So they were 12 inch high waist pants designed in the US, sometimes made in China, sometimes crafted in the US, sewn in the US. But the fabric was a synthetic fabric. I could not find like a really good quality cotton, right? So every time I would wash these jeans, although they fit, dude, they fit like a glove. The color was beautiful. The texture, gorgeous. The fit was perfect. The hem could have been a little bit shorter, but it wasn't a big deal. I ended up saying, okay, I'm going to save myself money. And I paid $40 for these jeans, right? What happens when I wash them? Even just in the washing machine, cold water, they would shrink. They would fray. They would end up the thinning out between the legs, you know, the chub rub, but like really, really bad. So it caused holes. And I wasn't wearing them absolutely every day. And I had several pairs. So I made the calculations in my financial system when it came to clothing. And I realized that in 1 year, I'd spent $250 on a pair of jeans. And that's when I was like, all right, I got to find a better brand. So eventually I found Cezanne, Madewell, Everlane, and I bought myself higher quality clothing. The Madewell jeans that I have, of course, they're not as, what was it called? They don't disclose as much the labor on the clothing, right? Because I don't know if slave labor or anything like that. Supposedly they're sustainable. Supposedly they're all of that. I would love to believe they fully are, but I personally don't know. I know Everlane has a better reputation. But I digress. So what ends up happening is that, or ended up happening, was that I overspent on clothing that I truthfully didn't need, because as the year went by, I was dropping sizes on top of that. I went from what was a size 11 to a size 7 and then a size 5 in that other brand, which actually their size 5 and 7 is like a size 28 waist, right? So what is that? A US size 6. Size 6 to size 8. So now in Madewell, I'm a size 29, even though I'm still kind of tiny, right? For me, that's small. For some people, that would be huge. But for me, that's small because I'm curvy butt, like all thighs and a tiny waist. So I found the jeans. They're not exactly what I want, but they're better quality. I use them often. And let me tell you, in the 4 months that I've had these jeans, they have lasted, right? They wear really well. They've retained their structure. Washing them is very easy. I go really light with the washes with them. I've always air dried my jeans. I've never put them in the dryer. And they work. So I'm not saying that you need to forego luxury, but it doesn't mean that you can't find a better quality product at a lower price. I ended up buying these at full price. So they ended up costing me, I think it was $150. When I went to buy another pair, I wanted a pair of like charcoal gray ones. And I love their version, the Madewell ones, of the 10-inch high-rise skinny. So I was like, you know what? I could probably find these on Poshmark for a lot less. Because in Westchester, we're paying like damn near 10% on clothes. It's crazy, right? So these jeans cost me $150 because I paid $15 in tax. I go on Poshmark. I find this girl, I negotiate with her because I love negotiating, and I brought down her price and I ended up paying $35,000 plus $5 for shipping. So $40 for a brand new, never worn pair of Madewell skinny jeans that have lasted me just as long as these. And I think they're going to last me for at least another year or two, right? If not more, if I really take care of them. Sometimes saving money is spending money. That's my point. So I want you to know the reality of where you're going. Capsule wardrobes, having maybe your bedroom set up with nicer quality sheets, right?
that's okay to spend in certain areas, but if you're just a frivolous spender, you spend to have things or you spend because you think you need it, but you're not actually analyzing, this is how debt occurred in the first place. So you're going to have to give yourself a reality check. I want you to take a look around the room, if you happen to be in the room right now, it's in your house. If not, when you go home, take a look around and say to yourself, what can I eject from this place? Is this a place that I love in terms of interior design? Is the, you know, even the stationery that I use, is it something that I like? If it's a whole bunch of hell no's, but yet you're in credit card debt because you've bought a whole bunch of stuff, I think it's time to reanalyze where you're going with it, right? You can paint items, you can refabric items, you can make your room look really, really dope by coming up with a theme and working on it. But that means coming up with a plan. So you're going to sit down and give yourself a reality check for every single room in your home, for your clothing, right? For the things that you use, including car transportation, if you need a bigger book bag because you're a commuter, whatever it is that you need on a daily basis, even the key holder on your keys, you're going to write it all out. And then over the next year to 5 years, you're going to work on up-leveling, right? You can budget that in through your cash flow or through your expenses. This is why I'm making you do this, because once you are able to know where I want to be in the future, because you already know where I am now, I've had the reality check of where I am now, you can create a better lifestyle for yourself. Okay, guys, I know I've been talking your ear off, but I don't want to stress you out, but we have five more to go. Okay, but I'm going to breeze through these because these are ones I'm going to make specific podcasts on. Once you've done that, you've created your reality check, you've created the vision for what you want, you know your lists, you've input your income, input your debts, you have a monthly calendar, you've categorized your bills, you have visualized the space that you want to make in your life for wealth, right? Now what you're going to do is realize that savings accounts are not your friend unless you know how to use your funds, right? If you dump all of your money in one single savings account and you haven't siphoned off money, you're in trouble. The reason why you're in trouble, in financial trouble and emotional trouble, is because at the back of your mind, you know that you don't really have a lot. So whether it's $20,000, $30,000 or $5,000, whatever it is, you need to separate bank accounts out. Now, most people say, I need 3 to 6 months of my living expenses for emergency. I need to have saved. I need to have my retirement accounts. I need to have my baby's college, so on and so forth. First, if you are not financially stable, you should not be saving for your kid. And those are the words of Susie Orman. Right? If you are not financially stable and you have debts, you should not be saving for your kid. Why? Because your kid is going to perceive mommy and daddy, or mommy and daddy as being stressed out, right? So that perception of where you are will cause emotional disturbance in the household subconsciously. And it's not fair for your kid and it's not fair for you. But if you take 5 years of that child's life to get yourself out of debt, the wrong kind of debt, and put it into the good kind of debt, when it comes time for this child to go to university, you will have the means to help them out, right? But if you don't, hold on. Sorry, I got interrupted. If you don't, then what ends up happening is that you will focus on what you don't have versus of what you can create together with your partner or create for your family unit, right? Whether it be a family of one, two, three, whatever. So that's why I want you to know that savings accounts and 401ks are probably the worst place for you to put your money, because 401ks, especially if it's for like a pension-based plan, right? So you have your pension and then you have the 401k through your employee, especially if you're union, is very difficult for you to flip over and manage yourself because you're going to pay a shit ton of tax on it. So you want to open up a Roth IRA as soon as possible and you want to start depositing money in there, because come tax time, right, come retirement, you can extract that dough. But what's even better is investing in things that will create a cash flow for you every single month. That is why I'm a huge believer in buying multiple family units or doing things like Airbnb, right? Because that's going to bring you money every single month. So if you know that every single month on top of Social Security and your pension plan, if you even have those, if Social Security even exists when we retire, right? What will happen is that you know that you can count on $10,000 a month, $15,000 a month. You're going to be golden. You know you're okay, right? But if you are only counting on $400 a month from Social Security and that's it, you're going to be screwed, right? Because no one really can live, especially with the way inflation is working, on this money like that. So I know I'm probably giving you a panic attack, but you need to have this reality check. It truly needs to be set in front of your face and be like, yo, dude, what the hell are you doing, right? You're going to have to start figuring out a plan. Now, I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend that I have $400,000 in savings. I don't, right? But there's multiple assets that I know that I need to attain. So my future goal is to get more multiple families units for my family unit, right? Which is my immediate family. You can do whatever you want that will create more financial wealth for yourself, because you're in a unique time right now that there are courses that you could take. There are, you know, even YouTube, there's education and there's online brokerage, right? So you could even do day trading. You can do selling clothes on Poshmark as a secondary business. You could do being someone's secretary. You could be an au pair when it comes to being in person. You could be a whole bunch of different things that'll bring you extra cash flow that you sacrifice maybe a little bit of time in your younger years, so it produces wealth for yourself in the future. But all of that is moot if you keep spending your dough, you don't track it, and you start thinking that only having one savings account is A-okay, because it's not. The banks will use the money in your savings account to lend it out, right? They won't pay you interest. So for example, at one point, because we cash manage a lot of accounts, there was like 20, 30 grand in a savings account. I think it made like 4 cents a month in that account. It was the worst savings account in the world. Who's going to survive on 4 cents return on investment every single month? Like no one, right? So why would you think that putting your money in a savings account is okay? So what do? You break it down. You have your emergency fund, because clearly people lose jobs, break legs, have car accidents, shit happens. So you need your shit happens pile, right? And that one should be anywhere from 2 to 3%. What I would suggest is having a better or higher credit card limit. Most people don't like that, but I'm a big believer. You pay your fucking credit card off every month. Most people don't do that either, and that's where they get in trouble. Your credit card is not there for you to buy shoes. Your credit card is there to help you with the expenses that you want to pay, so you pay them off every month, so you don't owe anybody, right? You're just using it like a little mini bank. So let's assume that you're responsible with your credit. You have a really big credit card payment, credit card limit, and you have your emergency holy shit fund, right? Once you have those in place, and remember, that big credit card is one that you don't have any debt on. Hold on a second. Okay, sorry about that. Business, you know? So once you are able to set that up, then you're going to create siphoning accounts. From your master checking account, every month you're going to siphon into different accounts. So I'll give you a few examples. In the future, we'll talk about it more in depth. But you are essentially going to pay yourself first. I keep getting interrupted. I apologize. Okay, sorry about that again. But credit card siphoning, account siphoning is going to be your best friend, because you're going to put all of this money into the right account. So you might have a vacation fund. You might have a medical fund if you don't have an HSA. You might have a retirement fund. You might have a, what other kind of fund would you have? Saving for a home, a deposit fund, right? If you're able to siphon it off, you'll have less of a tendency to want to go spend, because you're going to see $122 in your checking account. If everything is paid off, $122 in your checking account is just extra cash, right? You should not be sitting there panicking, I only have $122 in my checking account, because that money has already done its job. Money that stays in place, or stagnant money, is stale money. Stale money don't make money. So you want to make sure that your money is making money or it's serving a purpose in case of emergency. But it should never just be sitting in a savings account for a rainy day. That savings account needs to have a purpose, right? So having one savings account or a bank is not your best friend. Stale money, number 7. Stale money is something that I came up with my dad, actually. I hadn't heard it from anyone else, but it's like a piece of bread. You've cut it, you know that eventually you're going to toast it, but you left it out, so now it's stale and it doesn't taste right, right? It's not fresh, it's not moving, it's, you know, it's something that you're then going to have to fix. So stale money is money that doesn't move, it doesn't create more wealth for yourself, and it doesn't bring you any joy, right? So Marie Kondo sparks joy when it comes to her clothing, but the same thing can be applied to your money. So for example, your job might be stale money. I hate my job. It brings me stress. I have to transport myself, commute an hour and a half going, an hour and a half coming back on bad days that can end up being 4 hours of commute instead of 3. This is stale money for me. It's not bringing me purpose. It's not bringing me joy. It's not bringing me to a place of financial stability. That is stale money. Right? Maybe I want to be my own business owner. Maybe I can work online. Maybe I can help another person with their company. Whatever it is that works for you, you should go for it. And you should go for it now because you're not going to have an opportunity to do it later, right? Always, always, always open the door for yourself. Being complacent with something simply because you owe money is ridiculous. Money owed will be money paid if you come up with a plan for it. So if you know your debts, you know your income, you know all of your numbers, right? There's no reason that you should be dealing with stale money. But we still do it because we say stale money is stale money. And that's not true. Just because it's stale does not mean that it's still money that works a purpose for you. A cousin of mine was calling me, I think, for a year, almost every single day. Bitching about her job, don't like my boss, can't stand my neighbor, vindictive little things that her and the co-worker used to do to each other. Co-worker would leave to go get her nursing degree because she wanted to be a nurse eventually. She would leave early for work. Meanwhile, this one is still working late into the night and not picking up overtime hours. And my advice to her was, don't work overtime hours. They're not paying you. Don't do it, right? If you don't like that job, find another job. I would give her rational solutions, but it's really easy to stay complacent because you feel like it's flexible for you. Like she would be able to go in at 10 instead of going in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and she kind of liked that. So that was the perk. She could take vacations. And then I told her one day, like really straight up, and I was like, you are telling yourself you can't get the same perks in another place. Why? And she couldn't answer me. She couldn't. She was like, you know, I don't really know. I could, I guess, if I found it, but this doesn't exist. And I was like, no, you haven't even taken the effort to go figure out whether or not it exists. So grow a set of balls and go out there because a dude would not deal with it. And women tend to deal because they think that they can't make the same amount or they can't ask for more money. So what does she do? She goes and asks for her job, for her boss, to her boss, I want a raise. It was the same amount of money that a coworker that had just left was making, who happened to be male. They didn't give her the money. She calls me like practically in tears. I'm so angry. I can't believe that they wouldn't do this. They have the money now. I'm going to be doing his job, blah, blah, blah. I was like, so now you have no other option. Now you need to go find another job. So go do it. I think it took her about 4 months and she ended up being without a job for about 3 months. But she had the savings because she was prepared. She knew she was going to be looking for another job and it would take her anywhere from 3 to 4 months to find it. But she did. Eventually she finds it. She's ecstatic. She stays there for about 4 or 5 years, has a kid, decides not to go back. But she gave herself the option because she tackled it from the beginning. A lot of people don't do that. Right? That was really brave. It was super duper courage to be able to do that, right? Courageous. But what about you? Are you staying stagnant on purpose? Are you staying in stale money because you're conforming to something that you believe that you can't attain? belief is 90% of the work. If you believe that you can attain something, you can attain it. I'll give you another example. A friend of mine, who happens to be my cousin's husband, was telling me a story about his friend. His friend is in the financial analyst business, just like he is. He was making about $65,000, $70,000 a year. But he had gone to schooling, got his master's degree, went through all of these leaps and bounds, got a great interview, never asked for more money during the interview, just accepted what they gave him. His friend was in another business, goes to school real quick, comes out, says, I'm going to be a financial analyst, doesn't have the experience, didn't go through the leaps and bounds, gets on a flight, moves to California, and on the flight tells one of the guys that he happens to be sitting in the business class, I'm going to be finding myself a job as a financial analyst for over $100,000. The guy proceeds to ask him what experience he has with that. And he said that he didn't have any experience, but he had the guts and the balls to do it. He laughs, doesn't say anything, asks the kid for his number. Lo and behold, a few weeks pass by. He's not finding any jobs, but he is getting offers, right? But he's not settling for the $100,000 because people are not giving him the money that he wants. Who calls him? The guy on the plane. Listen, I like you. I think we're going to try you out for 3 weeks. I'm going to give you a job, but it's going to be in Miami. Are you willing to move? And he said, yeah, let's do it. Took the job, got it, right? That's the thing. He didn't settle until he got what he wanted. Now, I'm not necessarily telling you that you need to live on your friend's couch until you get what you want, because that's how all actors would end up being poor and starvation and working as a waitress for the rest of their lives, because you need to have some sense of security. You have to follow your dreams and have some sense of security, but it's a fine line. It's okay to wait at certain times. It's okay to hold out at certain times. And it's also okay to have multiple jobs that maybe you don't like temporarily until you get what you want, right? So that's what I'm talking about when we talk about stale money. Okay, so step 8 is real simple. It's goal setting. There's so many articles on goal setting. There's no reason for me to go through this with you step by step. We'll do that in another podcast. But if you don't set a goal, meaning my goal for how much I'm going to make in the next year, my goal for how many deductions I want in the next year, my goal for where I want to live, what vacation I want to have, what events I want to go to. You have to have goals in different areas of your life, how you want to even have relationships, right? You have to have those goals. In order to achieve them, you have to place them into a state of, I'm going to get because this is the reason, right? You got to list them out. So you need to set up your goals. That's also inclusive when it comes to financial goals. You know, if I want a house, I need to have the deposit. I need to fix my credit. I need all of these things to support my goals. So set your goal, figure out what you need to support that goal and how you're going to get there, right? So that brings me to number 9, which is financial management. This is another one that we'll talk about in depth in the future, but financial management is actually really easy. You create a system for yourself. Once you've set up Excel sheets or you use your financial program or whatever it is that you're using as a tool, right? Even the way that you set up your notebook or paperwork or file your receipts, right? File all of your papers. Once you set it up, you're going to set up a few days for yourself. I usually suggest 2 days. One day is bill pay and anything that has to do with contacting other companies in order to get those bills paid. So for example, let's say you need to go call Liberty Mutual because you need to ask them to lower your rate for the year because they raised it too much, right? If they decide they don't want to go with it, then you go source out another person with the same things, let's say Allstate, right? That requires you a day to deal with that. So I usually do that on Mondays. Then on Thursdays, what I do is financial allocation. Financial allocation is you allocating the money where it needs to go within the bank account, right? Because your bills have already been paid on Monday. So now the money that's left over is pure money that needs to have a job. You move the money, you give it the job, and then once you're able to do that, you then look inside of your accounting system and make sure that everything is correct and it's tagged properly so that your accountant at tax time is not sitting there bitching at you. You also take photos of all of your receipts and file them in an appropriate folder that does it and file away your paperwork. Thursdays are the days I don't look forward to, but they are the most important ones. Once you have set up your accounting system and you manage it on a weekly basis, do not do this every month. You want to do this every single week because you get paid every week. You want to siphon out your money. Remember, your money needs to move. You need to pay yourself first, your fund money. Then from your fund money, you're going to put money in your savings account, your emergency fund, and your savings account might be for vacations. Your emergency fund might be in case you lose your job. It might be a fund for a baby fund because you know you're going to have more expenses, so on and so forth, after you've paid off everything. Now your money is no longer stale money. It's moving money. My hope is that you also put it in stocks, mutual funds, investments that bring you more money at the end of the year. Once you've done that, you're going to set up your success strategy. And your success strategy is actually something really fun. You set up a little chart for yourself and you say, these are my goals. This is where my income and debt is. I have everything put together. Now my strategy for success is how can I make more out of what I've already got, right? And where do I see myself in 5 to 10 years, right? This gives you the long-term strategy that you need because you know that you can manage it every single week. And if you fall behind, it's not going to be something where you're going to sit there and cry about it. You know what you need to do. A success strategy is only actionable if you set up little steps for yourself. So let's give yourself an success strategy. Let's say you're an artist and you want to exhibit your work in a gallery. And the point of you exhibiting your work in a gallery is because you want sales, one. Two, you want your representative to get you people who are going to support your work, right? So you're going to want patrons. And that will bring you more money so that you can create more work, right? You're going to create a success strategy. What galleries are you going to be pitching? Is it going to cost you anything for a public project, right? If you do like a request for project. Are you going to need to pay any extra taxes on money that you will be attaining? Is the budget sufficient to justify you even setting up a gallery show for yourself? Or is this just an expense that is not going to bring you any money and it's just something fun you want to do? You have to figure out what those goals are so that your success strategy will work. Once that happens, there's a month-to-month plan for every single thing that you want to do and the finances will support it because you're paying yourself first, you're making sure that your investments are working for you, that your financial management is in check, and that you've created a visualized space for all of your billing, right? Your money is something that is energetic, but also manageable. So that's why I wanted to talk to you today about this. I know it's a little bit long, but all of the podcasts that we'll be going through in the future will be laid with the foundation of this one, okay? We're going to walk through it together. We're going to make up plans for you and go through every single one of these in depth where I can do like an action course with you. Okay? I love you, my dear, and I hope that we'll talk soon. So remember, money is energetic, but it can be good energy. It will duplicate and multiply because you track it. That which is tracked can expand, right? But if you don't track it, what's going to multiply is debt, right? We don't want that. We want you to multiply multiply income, right? And the income that you have, I want you to keep. So we're going to be talking about ways that you can do that. We'll set up a system for you. We'll set up days for you, schedule, how to do a calendar, whole bunch of stuff. So I can't wait to talk to you about this stuff. I know that for you, it's like, this is not spiritual at all. This is all financial. But what it'll do is it'll release all of the stress, anxiety, fears, doubts that you have about what kind of person you are in the world. And it'll open you up to be able to create a beautiful, beautiful life. So thank you for following me. This is Ascension Things, and my name is Marbel Canseco. You can catch me at ascensionbodega.com, and we'll talk soon. Love you.